Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a party cast lined up. We've got Tim here. We've got Purnell here. We've got Chris here. We've got Brooke here. And I'm here, unfortunately. So how's everyone doing?
Pretty good. We're all grumpy. We had to pause Elden Ring for this shit. But other than that, yeah. We're having a good night.
I
was able to wriggle out of last week's show with not having review to play an extra hour of Elden Ring, but no luck this week.
I have Elden Ring at home, by which I mean Dragon Warrior 1 on my Game Boy Color.
Awesome.
Chris, have you not fallen into the Elden Ring trap yet?
No, I was planning on getting it this weekend, although I'm going to be out of town. I over-budgeted, or I went way over budget last week, buying games I already have.
As you do.
Wait,
yeah,
what game already had?
I bought the digital versions of all of the Darius games on Switch.
Right, Google it, Moogle it.
Which, if y'all recall, I already spent tons of money on, like, the special editions of both sets.
Yeah, you're so like me with Rock Band.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's with shmups.
Rock Band. You can, like, if they're digital tracks, how can you double dip?
No, I'm saying the need to collect all the shmups is like me with the need to collect all the Rock Band songs.
Have you been up able to keep up with that shit?
There's
like 5,000 songs in. You can't have still been able to keep up.
There's 2950.
Sounds like he's packing his luggage and getting ready to skip town.
He does.
I am.
I got to get out of this podcast before they find me.
Don't ask any questions.
It's like we're having an argument. One of us is about to walk out.
Yeah, jeez.
It's except I'm gone. I'm not coming.
He's taking the cats with him.
No! Not my kitties.
Oh, those humans. Oh, wow. Speaking of Elden Ring, I just found something I didn't expect to find in the wild. That's some weird shit. There are portals out there.
Is he playing right now?
Rayol's Dragon Bar? What the fuck is this?
Oh, did you just teleport out there?
Yeah, it was like just a random mirror in a bush.
Oh my god, awesome.
Oh, are you inside of a like a building?
No, it teleported me to the outside of a building, and in front of it is a guy who looks like if he could see me, he'd fuck my day up. It's a giant winged guy.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, you're where I thought you were. Yeah, okay.
The hell is this?
That guy will wreck your asshole.
Welcome, Bug Kitty.
Everything where you currently are is going to destroy you.
Welcome, folks, to the SM Elden Podcast.
SM Elden Ring.
Ooh, nice.
That's just what this game does. It beats the shit out of you. But at least I have a new spell now. It took me 25 hours. I found a spell. It's
great. My God. Congratulations. This is no small feat.
It is not a small feat because I was running around using pebbles 25 hours. It was amazing. Somehow the very first message said, "Seek death." Thanks, guy. I appreciate it. He knows that what Tim just said is accurate.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some specific
questions. Oh, yeah, that's
right.
I forgot that
we're just
the, like...
Into it.
I just wanted to make a joke about the shooty pebbles.
Very nice.
Purnell, have you found the Dragon Burnt Ruins? It's really close to the start.
Dragon Burnt Ruins?
That's what they're called.
Wonder Dragon, where is the treasure chest that warps you to?
Yes.
Did find that. Fuck that place.
Yes, but if you can get out of that place and you muck around that swamp a bit, you're going to find some good-ass sorcery shit.
Really? So I should go back?
Oh, yeah. For free. Just like lying there.
Ooh, I might need to go check that out then.
Get on your horse and ride around, look for shinies.
Ooh, I'm going to go back and do that after I find a way to leave.
If you find yourself getting surrounded by the Burger King, that's not the right place.
The Burger King? Wait, what?
You heard me.
When you see him, you'll know. You'll be like, ah, damn, it's a Burger King.
It's a good Burger King. The burgers are dragon broiled.
There is good sorcery stuff in Ghost Burger King Town, but you got to work a little more for it. This other shit is just lying there.
How am I going to die? There's only, I opened the door, there was a Grace, and there's just a guy kneeling. Like, he's just an NPC.
All right, Purnell, it's time to pause it. This isn't just about you now. This is about my Elden Ring needs. Yeah. I got nine questions.
All right.
All right, number one, let's hear it.
7 of 9 are serious questions. Okay, do smithing stones and rune fragments regenerate?
No. Maybe they do. I've never checked, but I don't think they do.
Dude, I thought rune fragments didn't, but then I thought I saw some regenerate.
Rune fragments,
I believe, do. They're just things on those. They're just collectibles on the wild, but smithing stones, I don't believe, do. I've never seen them come back.
Okay. Smithing stones don't regenerate, but eventually you can buy them.
Okay, word. Because I've been wondering, like, how quickly should I be going through those? This is just some good context for me. Second question. In the world of Elden Ring, why do even the plants hate me and try to kill me? Why even the flowers?
Nothing loves Miyazaki. You in this game.
Yeah, that's across the board. From
the unless it's shaped like an onion, it doesn't like you.
Okay. All right, I can respect that, weirdly. All right, do all enemies have a chance of dropping something that they use or wear? Like, if I see a dude, he's got a cool shirt on, and he's got, like, a pole that he is fighting with. Can I get the pole from that type of dude if I see them using that weapon?
Generally speaking, yeah.
I've never even played with those rules. I'm just usually the guy that's like, kill him. Oh, he dropped something. Great. And if he doesn't, I'm just going to keep on running. I never expect anyone to give me anything but murder.
Purnell, didn't you say you're still using, like, starter equipment?
I am literally, well, keep in mind, I'm using a sorcerer. So
I saw you have a flail.
Like, I found, like, clothing, like, enemies have dropped, but it's never any good for my character because I'm a sorcerer and they're wearing, like, freaking armor and mess. And then I do have the flail, yeah. And, like, basically, weapons, I've been able to find new weapons, but the problem is I wanted a new staff because my staffs scale with magic, and that's also how you cast magic. So I want a new staff, but I'm still using the starting staff. I'm wearing the starting clothing, except for I found a headband, a commoner's headband that has zero stats, but I like it because I can see my character's face. So I put it on. Fashion.
Let me tell you what. Yeah. I'm like almost 60 hours in. I'm still wearing most starting armor. I haven't found quite the right stuff for me, but that's me. It's tough to find, like, medium light armor is what I'm having trouble finding that isn't too heavy.
Yeah, I've only found heavy so far. I started out, I don't even remember what my class is supposed to be called, the rogue, the bandit, or whatever.
Bandit, yes.
So, yeah, I thought, like most stereotypical girl gamers when it comes to combat games, really combat heavy games, I like to be an archer and sneak around and avoid, like, shit in your face. But I have slowly settled into sword and shield, and I never dreamed this would happen. It's been really weird for me, but I think I'm beginning to wonder. This is kind of like one of my more open-ended questions that I'll leave with y'all. Do you think that this is a common thing happening to players on their first playthrough of their first Souls game? It happens to be this game. Do you think a lot of players are going to end up doing what I'm doing and settling into sword and shield? Because I found a lot of those 100% protection shields, and I just, like, I ran out of arrows and I was like, yo, I need to get good at this shield because I don't know how to take out these enemies without blocking.
Yeah, I don't know about sword, but I would definitely say at least shield because of the fear factor of things fuck me up and you naturally cower behind a shield.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because if you're generally what the expert pro level folks do, which, by the way, I am not one of those people, they will literally just run around two-handing one weapon and prefer to dodge over guard. Though some weapons do let you guard it with two hands, generally you don't even want to. Also, a poisonous rock.
my god! I tried a one-handed weapon, like a really big honking one. I got off like some dude on a horse this weekend. It was so slow for me. I went back to like my quick sword, but I'm thinking about trying two-handed weapon on a sword more. I got another kind of open-ended question related to this, and the rest of them are really straightforward. Are there any enemies I'm not going to be able to take down unless I'm a magic user?
You'll be able to kill everything, but you're going to run up on it and go, I can't fucking beat that.
Totally. And you know, that's already been happening to me, but can you beat anything like in theory with any class? You know
yes.
What I'm saying?
Yes. Well, be- What you may run into is if an enemy has a certain damage affinity, you might have to get a little creative. By which I mean, like, you can always, you have like your basic weapon, right? You can always, like, throughout the game, there is going to be grease you can smear on your weapon to give it different damage types if you need it.
Word. Okay.
So if there is a boss that is vulnerable to, I don't know, to magic type damage, like you can smear some magic grease on your weapon and then you're doing magic damage. So that's how they kind of accommodate more melee oriented classes by letting you find and also craft grease.
I'll give you one more suggestion too, because I just came across this myself. So there's a guy that's on the beach south, slightly southeast of where you start the game. He's this naked man with a big sword, and if you kill him, he gives you something called Gravitas as an Art of War item. And if you attach that to your weapon, you can give it magic properties so it becomes a magic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I am using right now as this fucking scythe-wearing bird. What is it got? Fuck! What are you? God.
But if you don't have a high intelligence, that probably won't be as useful to you.
Ooh, yeah, my intelligence is pretty low, just like it is in real life.
Oh,
same.
Yeah, look for... Because I don't know how tuned into this, that like every weapon has scaling affinities based on like one of your statistics. So you're probably heading more in like a strength dex direction.
Yeah, I'm slowly settling into that direction for sure. I heard I can respec. That's not one of my nine questions, but I did hear that somewhere.
It's a long way off. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
But yeah, like strength dex is a good way to start because that's going to give you good just straight melee damage. But you can look at, you know, a weapon and see like, okay, do I get B scaling in strength or D scaling in dex or what? And that can make a big difference in how much damage you actually do.
Cool.
And eventually with the Art of Wars, you can make them like keen or heavy or quality, which will affect those affinities. So if you're going heavy strength dex, like in both of them, then you can go quality and you'll get a bigger bonus off of having a high stat in both of those. If you're more into strength, you go heavy. If you're more into dex, you go keen. If you're more into intelligence, that's when you do magic stuff.
Wait, what is keen?
Keen is it gives you a higher dex scaling bonus on a weapon.
Oh, are those the types of suggestions where you put the R word and it says types of things? Like you can choose one of two things or whatever?
Yep. Yes, that is important.
Okay. That's where the magic came from on this weapon. It was like you can be like normal or magic. And also, there are ghost magicians with giant magic swords. The fuck is all this? Everyone hates me. This sucks. Oh, my God. This is weird. This is really weird. And I just got wrecked. Because he summoned a huge blue sword and said, fuck you. Everything's me, but I love it. Like, it's amazing how I still see people going, I can't do this game. It's hard. It's really hard. And I feel compelled now, different from how I felt last week. I feel compelled sometimes to say, yeah, it's hard, but I've been playing for almost 30 hours and I have not even attempted a major boss and I don't care. If I manage to stop the game never beating a boss, I still got my money's worth out of the shit I have done. Like, it don't need to... People just want to win. When in reality, sometimes the journey is the game. Even if you don't technically win, the journey was your fun. And that's great, you know? But ultimately, the only thing stopping you from technically winning is your lack of ability, or not ability, but your lack of...
No, you're right. It's your lack of getting good.
Lack of motivation.
Yeah,
lack of motivation. Yeah, because like you can improve and get better, and worst case scenario, you can grind your stats to Cracktown and just win through attrition. And you could do that in the old Dark Souls game, so I know you can do that in this one. So it's just, you just got to try. That's all there is to it. And since they added respecking, I don't know when or where I'll get to do it. I just have the two larvae that let me do it. Since they added that, you'll at least be able to change your guy if you decide eventually that you made a bad choice in building your guy, which I'll be blunt, I'm pretty sure I did that. And my God, these guys are creepy. Why are they here? What a dick.
Hey, since we're doing Q&A, Carnage has a question for you, Purnell. He says, with Elden Ring having no pausing, how are you going to review a game while playing Elden Ring?
I'm I mean, I'm playing while talking right now. I could totally play a game while reviewing.
Oh my god! All right, I'm taking it back over here. Is there? I'm level 24 right now. Mm-hmm. I ran into that big ass dragon in the starter-ish area. Mm-hmm. I finally ran into him for the first time. Can I take that guy at level 24?
I'm thinking
you could take it at level 1 if you could handle it.
That in theory, if you're good enough, you can take out everything. I even heard that the guy in the tutorial, like that spider that comes out of nowhere and then boom, you're dead. Technically you could get that guy.
Yep. You can beat him.
Yeah. That's fucked up. This is crazy.
That's a common trope in all the Souls games that there is a boss in the tutorial who is supposed to kill you, but you can beat him. It's just
I really love that.
Yeah. I actually got him down to half of his health. I was shocked, but then he hit me one time. I was like, well, guess who sucks? You.
One of my former bandmates is a Souls, like a Twitch celebrity playing Souls games, and he's already doing a level 1 run of the entire game.
Good Lord. Oh,
God. See, I feel like I don't know if I'd want to do something like that. I mean, I get the challenge is why you do it, but like, for me, much of the fun is leveling up and getting new skills and
level 1 challenges for people who are like, you know, doing it so that they'll write a Kotaku article about him afterwards.
Oh yeah, that's true.
He's the same guy who
can exploit glitches, we know.
Well, no, it's not glitches. It actually isn't, but like he actually had an article written about him. Huh?
How about the guy who beat the game in 30 minutes?
No. I meant this person I'm talking about, but,
I believe he's doing it full on. I'm saying there are people who are like being at level 1, like, no, they're just exploiting glitches. That's not impressive. But folks who are like your friend, like that shit's impressive just by virtue of that. Like the whole point of leveling up is to give you a fighting chance. And this guy is saying, I don't need that shit.
Yeah. He also, he beat like all the the extra hard DLC like Bloodborne bosses with only fists, and it took like 15 hours to take down one boss.
Like actually 15 hours in the fight
of real time, yes, of Jeez. Real human time.
How do you do that? Like he didn't he, go to bed?
No, he just does this kind of stuff. Like I said, it's what he does for a living. So I mean, 15 hour workday punching a boss.
I guess if he's getting paid for by way of like you know all of his viewers and stuff, I'm like. 15 goddamn hours. I'd get tired of trying. I would just fall asleep on the game.
I get tired after 2 hours with you bastards.
No, you don't. You love it.
Two more questions. Then I'm going to give it back to Joe. These are really important to me. So I gotta get these. When I'm glowing gold with those gold things on me that are going up and down, what the fuck does that mean?
What?
When I get that gold glow and I'm walking around, there are these little vertical gold lines all over me.
Oh, that means you're the last dragon.
Oh hell yeah! No, what does
is
that
it?
Mean?
Hang on, is that when it's is it is there like little golden flecks in the air when that happens?
I know what you're talking about, but I haven't thought to check if that's happening with that. The other things.
There is like an Erd Tree shout like pollen shower that gives like a bonus to whatchamacallit, rune acquisition.
Okay.
Burger King.
Well, you've now given me like a trail to like Google this better too, because I just Googled like, why am I glowing gold in Elden Ring? What the fuck is happening?
Yeah, look at the little icons that are like under your status bar or like your health and your stamina. See if there's like a little icon under there when it's happening.
Okay.
And it's very tough to see. And this is the most annoying thing about the game is that it doesn't tell you what those icons mean. Like you really have to look it up, or you have to be able to figure out like between, you know, your environment, your equipment and your afflictions, what each one is. And it's really annoying.
Yo, dude, both my boyfriend and I were wondering.
I found the Burger King. I told
him. Hell yeah.
He's creepy as shit. Yeah. And he really doesn't like the Burger King.
Yeah, I'm like so happy about that. Tim got to see me freaking out about like I guess a player having that mask on and leaving like a mask. I was like, oh hell yeah, it's a Burger King. He's like, I'm so glad I was not the only one who thought that. Yeah. Looks exactly like Burger King.
Wear that mask?
Yeah, I want that mask. It's kind of like it's slightly off brand for me, but still kind of on brand. Okay, just one final question. This is probably the most important to me. Really quick, if an NPC kind of gives me a quest, you know, they give you quests, but it doesn't like show up as a quest. Okay.
Yeah.
So somebody gives me a quest and I'm like, okay, I'll get around to that. And then I see them somewhere else and they are no longer at the place they were before where they gave me the quest. And they're not talking about that quest anymore. can I still do that quest? This is the lady who's like, oh, all my friends were spiders and I wasn't strong enough.
I don't know what the deal was her talking about spiders, or I don't know if, I don't think that's a thing you can actually follow up on with her specifically, because her quest goes in a different direction. I think she's more just like yammering about how like people go into the castle and then they become grafted into spider. Like that tutorial boss is like what she's referring to.
Okay. I see. I got all confused because then I'm looking for spider dudes. And then Purnell knows I was looking for the marionette guys this weekend, which I thought were spiders until I got one of their pieces of equipment, because they have like kind of eight legs. They got the three arms and the feet. So I'm like, oh, hell yeah. These are the guys that my homegirl wants me to like tell that she failed as a person because she's not a spider or something. I was like, really looking forward to that. Then I run up on her in like the round table thing. And she's talking about something totally different.
Yeah, she just kind of gives up on that whole... I think she was in a really bad place in her life when you meet her in that shack. And then she gets the round table and finds purpose.
Dude, I think you're right. Okay, that actually clears that up for me. Thank you, dude. That was really worrying me. I mean, I'm sad I don't get to go do her weird spider quest that's not a thing. But I'm happy that she's hanging out now.
With that said, though, I do believe there will be situations like... I mentioned this, and I don't think it was like in a normal chat. It was probably in a game group or something. But the thing about this game is that you have to kind of treat it like you're on an adventure, and the people you encounter are the people that you meet on your adventure. And you're not going to encounter everyone, and you're not going to see all the stories unless you straight up FAQ it. Because
that is true.
There will be situations where you will just straight up not even find the person who initiates a quest line. And you'll see them maybe later on somewhere else where if you need to see them before that in order to be a part of their quest line or whatever, which means just by seeing them when you do, you already missed it. But you can't treat like, oh, no, I just missed out on content. It's like, no, that person was a part of my journey. That was someone else's journey. And good luck to that bastard, because they ain't talking to me. Like
honestly, that's so cool.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised that the golden pothead guy wasn't if it was possible to miss out on him, and that when he was stuck in the hole, like it's probably possible you just miss him if you don't catch him before.
Yeah, that's totally possible.
And I just want to let our listeners know, when Purnell says golden pothead, he's referring to someone who is pot shaped in the game and not referring to me. Thank you. Although I'll answer to that as well.
She's like, some of my friends have referred to me as the golden pothead. This is true.
I have been known.
A pothead with a head of gold.
thank you, Chris. I want to thank Joe for letting us do this. I know this took up a lot of time, but I really have had. When Tim yesterday on Facebook was like, you should ask more experienced Elden Rings players. I was like, cool, I got like 10 for y'all right now.
Nice. Thank you for letting me have this for Tim. So here we go. I can do this shit too. Is there a better way to hit the freaking ghost track, the ghost track guys, aside from just chasing after the tracks or trying to meet up with them halfway and hit them?
Oh, yeah, you just got to kind of catch them in the middle of the track. It can be tricky because they're fast, but...
They're fast, and I'm being attacked by two knife-throwing soldiers and a giant poison pile.
Well, you need to be addressing them when you're not being attacked by the other stuff.
But the other stuff is really big and annoying, and I don't want to kill it. I just want to kill this guy and run the fuck away.
Yeah, well, good luck.
That's what they all say. They all say you die.
But yeah, I have friends of mine, like our little group. And it was like the Wednesday or Tuesday before Elden Ring came out. It was like a freaking soul signal went up into the sky as we all like reached out to each other and piled back into our Slack channel that we've had since Dark Souls 3 was when we first got in there. Because before that, we were on the forums of my old, movie company website from like Demon Souls onward. And we'd be on there like talking about these games and sharing information through Demon Souls and Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2. And then the forums weren't there. So we had a Slack for Dark Souls 3, and we all kind of played Bloodborne at different times. So we didn't do that one, but Sekiro. And now we're all just in there like talking about Elden Ring and stuff. And it's awesome.
It's a good game for that. And I do appreciate the ability to have that. And honestly, the thing about this I like the most is that I'm the type of person who genuinely feels like the one thing that I'm generally missing in video games is the socializing aspect, because even when I'm like depressed and not feeling video games anymore, there's something about playing with other people, at least talking about them, that feels good. It's a large part of why the reviews episodes are great, because we're talking about games on this show.
Yeah.
But this game is a game that I just kind of fell into, as in, like, I didn't have to force people to play. I didn't have to beg anybody to play. It was just everyone's playing it, and for once, I'm playing the game that everyone else is playing. I can talk about it, and it's fucking great. Because normally it's like, hey, man, I'm playing God of War. It's like, I don't play God of War. Fuck.
It's like the pre-internet games or days of talking about video games, where you'd be like on the playground swapping secrets for NES games, and someone would say, you know, some crazy bullshit, and you'd be like, no way. You know, you'd hear about a thing in a game that was like, oh, there's no way that happened. And sometimes
you go in the background in Mario 3.
But,
like,
that was awesome too when that happened.
I totally had that too.
Yeah.
Also, like, you know, speaking to that as well, like, although I am planning on getting Elden Ring soon, I'm even sooner planning on starting Final Fantasy VII Remake and kind of exploring the liminal space of, like, you know, where people used to talk about that game.
Yeah.
I actually never started that game either, but I was like, I kind of want to.
It's great.
Well, everyone's moved on beyond it now, but it's like, I just watched like more than 2 minutes of footage for the first time, and I'm like, okay, I actually better crack my
copy open and play it. You got me, man. You still got me. I haven't started that fucker.
Hell yeah. It'd be a two-man club occupying the football stadium that's like empty now.
I mean, that game came out like a few weeks into like the initial 2020 quarantine, so I had plenty of time in my hands.
There were people I knew that don't even play video games that much, were like, I gotta get this game and play it, and they worked it, kind of like how people were working Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
True.
It was a trip. I thought Brooke had one more question.
Oh, wow, he kept count. I, you know, I didn't want to be obnoxious, so I didn't do the very last question, but Pernell's got a mind for numbers. He got, okay, final question, and you can see why I cut it. Why is Pumpkinhead so upset?
I don't think he likes that thing on his head.
Dude, he slammed his head. Sometimes I just, like,
I'll just hide. Is there a guy named Pumpkinhead, or are you referring to the guy on the bridge?
He kind of looks like the guy you told me about yesterday, who I looked up, Pernell Onion Bro, but he's like slamming his head on the ground. Oh, it's actually pretty sad and funny. I'm like really sad and laughing every time I like hide in a bush to watch him do his thing. No one's bothering him. He's just freaking out.
Sounds like
the game thing. So I've seen a guy on a bridge, and I've seen.
Is one on a bridge. Yes.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them, but the one I came across earlier is on a bridge, like right next to one of those resting spots. What it
I wonder. I wonder if it's because he feels like he's just a rat in a cage.
despite everything he's been going through.
No, the rats are a different enemy.
Despite his complicated feelings on the matter,
there are rats in cages. So.
Oh, I haven't seen them in cages yet. I've only seen them on the loose. They're a little too cute for me. I'm having some problems killing these guys.
Oh, Doug, you just let that go and murder those little shit sacks.
Oh, man.
God, come on, hurry up, horse man. Giant.
All right, Joe, I think your podcast is clear to continue.
Is it?
Are
we good? Should we get to reviews? Or is there anything else someone wanted to talk about before we get to those?
We'll build up some more Elden Ring questions in the next week, I'm sure, for next week's episode. Right, if people want to send in questions about Elden Ring, I will answer. I will hold
the SML podcast at gmail.com. Feel free to shoot us an email.
That'll be amazing.
So exhausted. Just like,
just fucking email us and just...
Oh, I got one more question.
Gotta follow the whims of the people.
Oh, Pernell's got a question now. Let's fucking do this. Let's go. What's up?
So,
sorry, Joe. This is my fault.
You probably can't answer this if you haven't been playing with magic. I finally got to magic spells, and I got that one spell called, like, I guess, like a, you throw three stars. And as far as I'm concerned, am I crazy or are the pebbles better?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't been doing straight sorcery, but...
No sorcery here, friend.
No, I'm doing faith, so I'm hucking lightning and fire at people.
I'm got Scarlet Rot. Apparently, that's a status now.
Oh, that's no good. Yeah.
I saw that on a loading screen. I think you get that in the Florida area.
Yep.
Oh, I'm in Florida right now. It stinks.
I can tell, man.
Yeah, that place is a nightmare.
But I did kill the wandering green horseman, which was cool, so I'll take it.
Ooh, I haven't seen that guy yet.
Rootbeer wants to know if anyone played the Kirby demo.
My child played the shit out of it.
Nice.
My thought was that I didn't see the point of the demo because it's Kirby. I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, I'm going to be buying it.
I want it.
I mean, my kid, he played it over and over and over. He played it like the whole weekend. Like, whatever was available, he played the crap out of it. He wants it very badly.
I'm curious, though. It sounds like Root Beer played it. What did Root Beer think of it?
We'll just sit here and wait for a reply.
I was just going to say, in the meantime, as somebody who owns over 900 games on the Switch, I don't feel right downloading demos.
Agreed. Really? There's no time. Like, I got games to play, and I know I'm going to buy that one, so whatever.
Awesome. I got Kirby Star Allies I haven't even opened up yet.
I will say this, though, in regards to demos. I have talked myself out of buying games by using demos before by saying, if I don't even play the demo if I can't play the demo before the game comes out, I have no point in buying the game. Because I didn't have time for the demo.
That's why I didn't get Triangle Strategy. I was like, I didn't even finish the demo. I'm like, I probably shouldn't buy this yet. You know, I should probably at least finish this demo that rolls straight into the game before I pay money for it.
That's something I think Square does lately is a lot of their demos are, you know, your progress carries over into the full game. Mm-hmm. I know they did that with Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin.
Yeah.
They're going all the way back to Bravely Default.
Yep, the OG, where they really started doing it.
I think that's the last demo I played with any seriousness.
I may be the only person who said this, but to this death, like, that's still like their best game in the last like 10 years that isn't like World Ends With You, which I guess technically wasn't 10 years, so.
Is Bravely Default not 10 years old yet?
No, Bravely Default is, but World Ends With You is over 10 years old.
So. Oh, I see.
And that was the one I was like, but aside from World Ends With You, but for all these games they put out, whether it be Tokyo RPG Factor or whatever. Bravely Default 1, even with this bullshit second half, is probably the best game they put out in eons.
Oh my god. Bravely Default is turning 10 years old this year.
Yeah.
My old man hip.
Oh, man.
Oh, my precious antique goiter.
Anyway, should we get to review?
My model train.
We should, or else we're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah, we got to get them to bad people. Let's focus.
Yeah, let's get going with these. First game to talk about tonight is Phantom Breaker Omnia, developed by Mages, published by Rocket Panda Games, released March 15th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99. Phantom Breaker Omnia is a fast-paced 2D anime fighting game that features 20 unique characters pitted against one another to make their greatest wishes come true. The ability to choose between three fighting styles will appeal to seasoned gamers while making the game accessible to newcomers. Tim, tell us about your time with Phantom Breaker Omnia.
Phantom Breaker Omnia? All right, so this game is a fighting game. This is kind of a updated re-release of a game that came out some years ago called Phantom Breaker Extra. It was made in Japan by Majex? And it is kind of being brought and updated and brought over on all the modern consoles as kind of a labor of love project. And so what it is a anime ass fighting game where you have a bunch of anime ass characters, mostly ladies who are just like, yeah. It's very fast paced, very, you know, anime styling in the characters and cutscenes and in just the whole vibe of the game. That is what is going on. The fighting system is pretty simple, which is good, I guess it's simple for picking up and playing, because basically you have like a light, medium, and heavy attack, and then all the specials key off of one button, not unlike Smash Brothers, where you get which might be a horrible comparison to make for serious fighting game people, like, oh god, it's like Smash, but it's there, I think, to make things a little bit easier to manage, where it's like, okay, if you press towards your opponent and hit special button, you'll do a move. You many times it's a projectile. If you press
Evil Zone.
Yeah, sure. I don't know what that is. If you press down in the button, you get a different special. If you press back in the button, you get a different special. If you press the direction with like a pair of buttons, you get a different special move. But basically, you know, at the base level, you're not having to memorize like, oh, is this character charge based? Does this character have 360 motions? What quarter circle plus button attacks do they have? What dragon punch motions do they have? They don't have any. You just push in the direction and you hit the special button and special move come out like, wow. As such, it is pretty simple to jump in there and start throwing special moves out there. The combo system is pretty easy to get into when you're just kind of dialing in light, medium, heavy punch, throwing a special, and you get a pretty good looking fancy schmance combo. You, of course, have meter in this game, as is standard for every fighting game these days. Meter can be expended to do EX moves, which is powered up versions of your special moves, by hitting certain combinations of the buttons. You can key off like a custom combo type deal, like from the Alpha games. They have straight up super combo type deals, all activated. It just goes with those four buttons, and it throws the combinations of them up on the shoulder buttons for easy access. When you select your character, you select a style with them, which are Quick, Omnia, and Hard. Hard meaning more of like it doesn't make the character more difficult to play. Well, arguably it does, in that it makes them hit harder and be a little like less speedy and combo friendly. Quick is faster, more combo-y. And generally it feels like you get more. Omnia is weird. It's kind of a hybrid between the two, but you lose some of your options for like your super special attacks at the same time. The bottom line is you have 20 characters, think plus, and then you have different styles for each character. So there's a lot to mess around with. In practice, actually playing the game, it was not especially, I guess, my style of fighting game that I enjoy. It felt like a little bit, I know there's depth to it, but just kind of, you know, whacking against computer controlled characters, it felt a little simplistic. And I felt like I was having trouble with like defense and like really good defensive options for countering out of like the AI characters just like trying to combo all over my ass as I'm just like cowering in the corner. Like when you have enough meter, you can do like a burst counter type deal by just like mashing on some buttons and it'll just kind of back them off of you. But that's if you have meter. If you don't have meter, I'm just kind of like there, like kind of looking for an opening in their hit string to get in there and having a lot of trouble with kind of like basic pokes and counters and just like basic footsies and being safe. And then like even getting in on characters can be tough because like everyone's so fast and just whip something out and just knock you away. But I was having trouble with this stuff, but the AI was not. There is a, and also like with kind of that simplicity of assigning all the specials to, you know, a button in a direction, I felt like it took, despite being, you know, easy to pick up and play it, I had a tough time like feeling a big difference in the characters as I was kind of bouncing around the roster and just like how they played, because they're all adhering to the same exact button inputs, and I'm like, I get a certain amount of tactile like feel and feedback out of being like, oh, okay, well, these are the moves and doing these motions is how they roll into combos and give each character a more distinct playing flavor. And I didn't get that as much out of this game. There is a good amount of, you know, single player modes. It's kind of standard stuff. Like there's a story mode where you'll pick a character and kind of go through their individual story. It's not like an overarching story. And there is a survival mode. There is a arcade mode, which is just, you know, your basic beat up a few characters. They have not really a tutorial in the game. Again, this is a revival of a game that's almost 10 years old. So like I've gotten kind of used to a lot of modern fighting games that lean into having more expansive tutorials and demonstrations and explaining their mechanics more, where this is more like literally flipping through a instruction manual like days gone yore of like 20 years ago, where it's like, okay, I got to look through the instruction manual to see what everything does, kind of try to memorize it and then pull it off on my own. Like, there are move lists accessible and viewable in the game, but I mean, I don't know how long it's been since I've played a fighting game and I've hit the pause menu and there wasn't a move list right there to reference. And of course, you know, again, most of their specials are just tied to buttons and directions, but there is variation between the characters and what inputs they have available, especially once you get into like when you're hitting two buttons at the same time. And that was not quickly readily accessible in a fight to just kind of reference. And that's frustrating for me. You have it has online play, but it lamentably does not have the, you know, much desired rollback netcode in it, which is the preferred netcode of, you know, fighting game players. And the developers, you know, to their credit, they did explain this. There's just like, you know, we looked at how we could do that and we'd have to basically reconstruct the whole game, and we do not have the money to do that. So it was like,
that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, it is fair, but it is still a bummer. But it was just like, you know, basically the game would not exist if we couldn't afford to do the game if we had to absolutely do that. So yes, it's understandable, but also it's like, well, that may make it difficult for a community to actually flourish around the game. That's kind of be kind of niche to begin with, and probably tough to find players to begin with. So that's kind of a bummer. So, but that said, I think possibly the, you know, the best scenario for this game, and someone wanting to purchase this game, is that you want to buy something to sit down and play with people in person at your house. Because it is accessible, it is easy to jump into, and just kind of get in there and start doing some flashy moves. And there's a lot of characters to play with. So I think that is like who it's going to appeal to the most. I think people that are just kind of looking to start in a fighting game are going to be much better suited to more recent things like King of Fighters or, you know, Guilty Gear from last year. Even though they may be complicated, they do, I think, a better job of onboarding you and being accessible that way. And they have rollback netcode, so you can play against people online in a more desirable fashion. But, you know, this is a, you know, bit of a throwback. I think it's good that it exists, but it's kind of tough to give it a full-throated recommendation when I didn't love the fighting and like the online, despite, you know, the understandable reasons why it is at the point it's at. You know, it's still something that's going to hold back the growth of this game.
No.
Yeah.
Well, the game is $39.99. We need a verdict. What are your thoughts?
I refuse. No. Yeah, no, I think it's a solid try. I don't think I give it a full-throated buy, but it is certainly fun, and you will get the most out of it, I think, in an in-person scenario with people. It is up if you want a physical edition. I always try to keep track of this. Like, Limited Run has the pre-orders open now, so you could actually get the physical edition. The pre-orders have not closed on that if you're looking to get this.
Isn't there a collector edition with it as well? Like a
probably. They always do one. They rarely do something that's just... They rarely do just the vanilla game in box. Usually there's something more you can do with a soundtrack and such, but I don't have it in front of me. But just to make people aware, if they are looking to make the purchase and they would like to get a physical.
Yeah, it has an acrylic standee, an art book, a soundtrack, a pin set, and a bunny plush.
It's a nice box. Nice plush. It's $100. It's not bad.
Nice.
But yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, Tim,
it's only $10 more for the physical edition if you're just getting the game over the digital.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
No, not bad. All right.
Cool. Do you have any, any final thoughts, any final words?
I miss you too, man.
I missed everybody last week. And yeah, I did like listen and I was like, oh, they mentioned me. They're talking about Elden Ring.
I was so pumped. I had all this shit prepared, and then I saw you weren't in the lineup chat, and I was like, God damn.
Before okay. He's like, okay, really second quick. String, Purdale, I'd ask some questions about the game.
Yeah.
I was like, hey. I will be back next week.
Before you leave, I know you're a little ahead of me in content in the game, but I was wondering if you encountered what I encountered yesterday, which is like the coolest thing that I personally encountered in a game. I really love like crazy good environmental set pieces. I'll try to describe in a way that won't give spoilers to anyone listening if you haven't come across it yet, but there is kind of sort of this lady singing that you can play hot and cold with to get near her, and then it, within earshot of that where you can hear it at the same time, there's a set piece with a big ass bell with some rocks. Have you been in that area?
Big ass bell with some rocks.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm trying to be really vague here. Like, that's awesome. Like, most people in the area are going to see that, but like, if you're up on the rocks, there's like something else kind of making music too, and I don't think they interact. Dude, oh my god. I've been like freaking out since that happened to me yesterday, and it doesn't appear to be like related to the plot either. Just really like insane set pieces.
Yeah, I had a note related to the singing because I couldn't figure it out for the longest
time. Oh, I didn't have a note related to the singing, but I had a note related to Rocky Balboa. And like, long story short, I haven't done the note thing yet because I don't know if it's gonna cause him to stay still, and I kind of want to keep him alive. You know what I mean? Yeah. I gotta think about what I want to do there. But like, that just blew my mind. I really wanted to share that with somebody because like, even just thinking about it, I'm getting chills. Like, this is going to make me sound like a loser, but some of the best times of my life were when I play Witcher 3 and I come across something in the wilderness that just freaked me out. And then I find out this is an awesome set piece and it's not even related to the plot. And it just like would give me chills, dude. But, like, that's some of the happiest times of my life. And this game is giving me like that experience times 100. I've been freaking out.
Let me tell you, like, just real quick, there was one moment in Witcher 3 where like,
sorry, Joe.
No, I don't care. It's free content for the show.
You made me think about this. It was just like, there was one moment in the game where I climbed up on top of this mountain, and like, I was up on like it was all like, you know, pretty much covered in trees, but there was like a rocky, you know, peak to it. And I climbed up on the rock and I saw something moving in the trees, and I still have no idea what the hell it was to this day, because I didn't go down and look at it, but I could see it moving. And, you know, probably if I saw it up close, I, you know, it's some creature in the game, but I don't know that. I just saw it like moving around in the trees moving. And I was like, I don't want to deal with that thing right now, whatever
it is. Oh my God.
And I just scuttled my way down the other end of the mountain.
That's awesome.
And then from there I went to some cave and then found some secret passage in the cave, and there was like a vampire in there. And like, that's the kind of crazy shit that also happens in Elden Ring that I love. I'm just like, where the hell did I end up? This is insane.
Yeah. Oh my God. I never thought I'd have a game like get me that good environmentally than Witcher again. And this is just like, it's not fair to compare to a game in 2015, but like, I never had anything like that before. And then this game does that to me like every hour that I'm playing it. I'm like, oh my fucking God, dude, it's crazy.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
I'm so happy.
I am totally with you. Yes. All right.
Okay, dude.
We will reconvene next week. Yes.
Okay.
Good night.
Night-night.
Enjoy the rest of the reviews. Bye.
Tune in next week for more Elden Ring talk here on SM Elden Ring.
Oh my God. I love it.
All right. Next game to talk about is Dawn of the Monsters, developed by 13AM Games, published by WayForward, released March 15th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. The cataclysmic battle between giant monsters has begun in this manga-inspired side-scrolling kaiju beat-em-up. Titanic creatures known as Nephilim have invaded Earth, and the only hope of stopping them is Dawn, the Defense Alliance Worldwide Network, which unleashes its own colossal combatants to defend against the enemy hordes. Purnell, tell us about your time with Dawn of the Monsters.
Oh, what a coincidence. I just died. Okay, so now that happened,
oh, Lord.
Let's talk about Dawn of the Monsters. So this game is actually a pretty cool bit of a beat-em-up. So it's a kaiju-themed beat-em-up, because it's interesting. You think about beat-em-ups in general, it's a fairly saturated market. So you might find yourself thinking, okay, what can a game do to essentially stand out from the rest of the pack? And that, in my opinion, is a pretty good way to do it. Kaiju-themed. So in this game, you play as one of four individual characters. One or two of which are actually characters that are like actually people. Oh, correction. One of them is a person who transforms into a kaiju. Another one of them is a person who is piloting a giant robot. And then lastly, the other two are two kaiju that have been commandeered by Dawn to use in the battle against other kaiju. So they're called like Nephilims in this game, but screw that, they're kaiju. So the idea behind this game is that you are going through a series of beat-em-up levels, scrolling left to right, and it takes place across four different cities or so in the game. Each of those city areas are composed of multiple stages, and they're all fairly reasonable in size. They're not fully sized stages, because I guess the idea is that they want you to have be able to go into them a bit piecemeal because of something I'll get into in a minute. But each of these levels will generally have a narrative mission established behind them. But really what it boils down to is you choose a character, you get down to business, and you just start beating the crap out of other kaiju. And the process of beating up the kaiju is pretty nifty, too. So you have a light attack and a heavy attack. And between those two buttons, you can do a normal string of combos. Nothing too complicated, just like, you know, maybe a punch-punch, but then this might be a punch-punch and an uppercut. You have that. You have a sort of an execution attack, where if an enemy is low on hit points and you have one rage meter filled up, which I'll also talk about in a second, you can press the button and you can pretty much kill them gang execution style, and you'll get some of your health back. And then lastly, you get these like specific special moves, like hold down like the left trigger and then one of your three face buttons, and they perform their own special attack that's really unique to each character, though technically they're all pretty unique in them themselves. But
okay, that's two. Thank you.
Unique. That's right. Just dumping them right in there. So in a sense, one thing I like about this is that due to how these special moves play out and also kind of how the gameplay concepts play out, the different kaiju actually play differently enough that you will be able to probably find a favor and go, this is the play style I prefer. Like one is excels at like long range attacks. One excels at, I guess, sort of quick based attacks, which is kind of funny given this game because everyone's pretty slow. And then like the other kaiju that I play, cause there's only one kaiju I did not use, and that's one that can actually summon minions. But the other kaiju that I did play is actually probably the most traditional beat 'em up character I've seen. He felt like someone in a Streets of Rage game, except everyone's ginormous. But as you beat up enemies in the game, you will generate rage meter. That rage meter is what you use to activate the three moves I mentioned that are associated with the trigger button and also how you execute your execution attacks. And then, of course, even still, if you beat up enough guys and get beaten up enough, you'll charge a cataclysm meter. And when that maxes out, that's how you can press both trigger buttons to do your super-duper cataclysmic attack, which isn't necessarily a screen filler. It just depends on the monster. Like, I've used two of them. One of them is like a sort of nuclear bomb where he sort of creates like a mushroom cloud around him that kind of spirals upwards. So anyone around him pretty much takes damage. And then the long-range characters is like a giant, like, rail gun. So if you're facing the wrong direction, which I have done, you kind of waste it. But otherwise, it's still pretty cool. So basically, you're running through these levels, fighting these enemies, picking up buildings and using them as melee weapons, and also sometimes other things like power lines, which I thought was pretty cool, to beat up these different monsters. And sometimes at the end of a level, you'll fight like a sort of mini-boss type thing that kind of closes off the stage. But at the end of a city area, you will fight like a super boss, like the major boss of the area. Gets his own life bar, usually is fairly unique for... There's a third! Yeah, fairly unique compared to the rest of the enemies in the game, because most of the time you'll come across a new monster who will then later become a normal enemy, which is a beat 'em up staple as well. You get your hype, get you all hyped up, like, wait a minute, he's normal now and he's still a dick? That's not great. And then as you're doing all these things, as you go to each set piece of a level, you will get graded. The grades are based off of how long you can maintain a combo, how few times you can get hit, execution attacks, and the works. And if you can maintain all those things and ultimately get a high score enough on the level, you will get a rank at the end of the stage, which will determine what booty you will get at the end of the level, too. Said booty consisting of four or less items that you can find that you get to choose some of to take with you. And these items are not really moves so much as perks that you can equip on each character to augment their stats and also give them a special, you know, sort of like ability. For example, you might get one that increases your attack and your defense and your speed, and also builds your rage gauge 20% every time you like do an execution attack. So something like that. And you can equip the three of those. You will be getting more and more of these as you play through the game. You can sell the ones you don't want and keep the ones you do. And the better you rank, the better the quality or tier of the item you will be able to get. You can also win like palette swaps this way too. Lastly, last few other things you can do in the game are you can spend money earned on the different levels or from selling these items I mentioned before to purchase new palette skins for your characters or additional health or rage meter increases as you unlock them in the game. And there are like chat sequences that you can read or watch rather, because they all everybody's voice, which is kind of nice. But it kind of adds a bit of a narrative to this set piece, because in addition to the narrative that plays out before selecting every stage, these dialogue sequences are just like the characters talking to each other about their lives outside of battle or sometimes about battle. It just gives you more context and insight on just how these, who these people are and how they live. And it's kind of cool. I like it. I like having access to that. And there's an archive that you can kind of read up on all the characters too, like, you know, who they are, where they come from, their origins. And I found it kind of funny that the first time I went there, the character who watched the archives go, "Wow, you actually want to read something?" I was like, "Yeah, I do. I do. Whatever." But it's kind of nifty that they did all these things in order to give you more insight into the world that you are playing in. All in all, as far as the game goes, I found it to be pretty fun. I only wish that it played out faster, though I understand why it doesn't, because that whole slow lumbering process is probably meant to imitate, you know, how slow and lumbering kaiju monsters are in the respective movies. They never run. They never dash. They're always slowly stomping and just smashing things. Not to say that you don't have any evasive moves, because you can parry enemies in this game, which I do like. And by the way, take note, other beat 'em ups, you can parry up and down. You can actually up and down evade, not just left to right. I freaking hate that games don't want to do that anymore. but you can do that in Dawn of the Monsters, and I appreciate them for allowing that to be the case. It's a quality game. I just wish that, you know, it was faster, and the environments, I mean, they change when you go to the different cities, but when you are in a normal, in a specific city, they kind of, they don't really change all that much between the levels within the story itself. So I kind of wish that they changed a bit more between stages in a city, but all in all, it's still fun. I had a good time playing this game, and I wasn't expecting it to be a standout, and it turned out I was wrong. This is a pretty cool title.
Nice. Well, it's $29.99. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a good buy it title. It's designed with grinding in mind. And from what I know of people who buy other fighting games like Streets of Rage 4, you buy them knowing that it's going to end shortly, but you'll come back to it to play with other characters or whatever. So I think this is a buy it title. This is on par.
Cool. Works for me. Up next is Zombie Rollers Pinball Heroes, developed by Zing Games, published by Daedalic Entertainment, released March 2nd on the Switch for $14.99. Zombie Rollers Pinball Heroes is the ultimate mashup of classic pinball and zombie defense with roguelike elements to ensure no two playthroughs are ever the same. Chris, tell us about your time with Zombie Rollers.
All right, Zombie Rollers. So this is a, I thought this is a pinball game at first. It kind of looks like a pinball game. It kind of almost plays like a pinball game, but it's like, it's a roguelite, I guess you would say like a horde defense game. Like, so it's not like tower defense where you set up traps and whatnot, but like you just literally just fight off waves of enemies, like in, you know, until you're done. But it's done in, like, framed in this kind of pinball-y way. So you start off playing a, I don't know, a fire Viking or fire barbarian, I guess. His name is Benjamin. And literally, yeah.
Really nice.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And he's, the game, like, it starts to kind of tell a story, but then it's just kind of referential, like self-referential and stuff. It's like, oh, is this a tutorial level like in all video games and blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, you don't have to take this game seriously at all. What it is that Benjamin is in control of this kind of cannon turret thing with a gate. And what the cannon does is it fires a ball into the battleground ahead, while the little gates like swing and act as your paddles so that you can fight off hordes of the shambling undead. So they kind of move perpetually towards you in, like I said, predetermined waves. Your quest is to clear them all. Well, in most levels it is. And once that happens, you basically move on a like board game style map, and you choose paths. And the thing is that when you move forward, the way back is then blocked with a terrible plague. I think you can actually still walk backwards through the plague if you want, but it does like massive damage to you. I don't really know. I didn't try. either way, you're kind of pushed into like making decisions as to what pathway you're going to go through, and that's going to kind of determine like how your level's going to go. And eventually, at the end of the board game style path, once it's all, you know, unlocked and stuff, you fight a boss and then move on to the next one, and then repeat at least 100 times, because, and I'm not even joking, because there's actually 10 unlockable, well, there's 10 characters in total. You have Benjamin and 9 other unlockable characters. And one of the characters is unlocked after, I think, 119 levels. So,
wow.
That's, yeah, you have a lot of levels to get through to unlock all the characters. And then there's 2 more that have even more special final boss like requirements. So, yeah. And actually, even to unlock the game's hard mode, which it starts off in the easiest mode, which is normal. So that's kind of like the Burger King medium-sized drink, and there's no small drink. So, yeah, you start on normal. And to unlock hard mode, you have to beat normal twice. So that's
interesting.
Yeah, they really want you to play a lot of this game. Fortunately, it's a real fun game, so you're going to want to. So like any good roguelike, as you progress through the stages, of course, if you die, you have to start all over again. But more things get unlocked as you progress. And you also unlock this gallery of sorts as well with your progress. And as you pass levels, you basically get to choose, like, hey, do you want this move or do you want this move? And there's lots of special moves that you can do. Like, basically, you use your shoulder button or your trigger buttons for the paddles. And then when the ball is in play, you can use any kind of special moves that you have set to the different face buttons. And some of them are real good, and they do reflect, like, typical pinball and, you know, video game pinball type of things. Like, there's a multi-ball that you can get, but of course a multi-ball is awesome when you're, you know, fighting hordes of zombies with pinballs. There's like one that like makes the ball shoot bullets, which is kind of great. but it's hard to aim. But actually I took down the first boss with it pretty handily. It was really nice. And there's like things like lightning and fire, you know, like magic, this, you know, kind of typical video gamey stuff. And then there's also like things like bonus stages where you collect treasure. Like, so you have to basically grab the zombie key and then get your ball over to the zombie box and like unlock it with the key, and that'll get you something else that's really nice. There's ways to spend your money on like different upgrades and stuff like that. So there's a lot, honestly, too much almost going on with like getting your character upgraded. And that's the only real thing about this game, is that I feel like it's very busy. Each stage is bright and colorful, and like by the time the zombies even start showing up, it's like it already looks like a Where's Waldo page. It's like there's so much that you can't really tell what's going on. You just keep firing your ball out there until they tell you the level's done, you know? especially given that the perspective is behind the bumpers and then kind of angled downward. Like, you don't, like, most of the game that you're supposed to see is not the part you can see. Like, you see a lot more that you're not directly interacting with due to the game's angle. So I kind of wish they had a few more options there. But honestly, that's just about my only complaint about this one. It's real solid and fun. Plays nothing like real pinball. In fact, if you lose your ball, it just causes like 2 HP damage, and your character, you know, can have like lots of HP. So it's kind of like, it's not about losing. It's just about fighting off the zombies. Oh, and by the way, you can hit the zombies with your paddles too if they get too close. Like, you don't even, you're not defenseless without your ball. You just whack them with the paddle and you're good. But yeah, it's a really clever game. It's really fun to play. I like the roguelike approach to it because that gives you a reason to kind of try and get those higher levels and stuff. And, you know, like I said, the progression, it doesn't feel like you only just progress to a certain point and then it just gets too hard. It's like if you die, you start over. So you can just kind of keep building up a better loadout until you finally win. So I like that for this game, and I think it's a good one.
Cool. $15, your official verdict?
Yeah, $15. It's a buy it. This is a good experience, even if you're not totally into pinball. Like, this is for, like, people who actually dig Sonic Spinball, you know? Like, it's not a pinball game. It's not a Sonic game. It's its own thing, and it's good.
I like how you got Purnell's attention with that.
Either that or he just died in Elden Ring again.
Oh, I did. Don't get me wrong. I did just die in Elden Ring. But he also got my attention. I had to stop playing the game because I'm dying too much because I got the sound off and dudes are like, tiptoe, tiptoe, which is a lot easier for them when I can't hear their asses. So.
Well, it's your turn anyway. So.
Just in time.
Yes, Purnell's turn with 100 Bullets, developed and published by Silverware Games.
I'm excited about this one.
Released March 8th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $9.99. 100 Bullets is a twist on a shmup. It's a don't shoot yourself up. In this reinvention of the shmup genre as a puzzle, dodge 100 of your own bullets and encounter your own actions as the enemy. You control the bullet pattern. Can you outsmart the walls that surround you? Purnell, tell us about your time with 100 Bullets.
God, I gotta say, even before going to the review of the game, don't let what I'm about to say jade the review itself, but God, I hate that description, and I hate how they sold it on it, because it didn't set you off. Well, if you remember, their whole campaign was like, we're going to change the shmup genre forever with our new game, but we have no photos or video. You had to wait for the game to actually become available, and I was all ready for a shoot-em-up. Shmup, an actual shmup. But like Joe just kind of said, this is a puzzle game. This isn't a shmup at all, though it is a shmup in the sense that bullets exist in it. But the idea behind this game is actually that you are, I guess, a shape. I don't know what you're supposed to technically be, but you're flying through a series of shapes and patterns. And the goal is to outlast a certain amount of time, essentially. Now, here's the rub behind the game. Time passes as you move on the board. If you stop moving, the clock counts back up to where it started, and you have to do it again. Also, as you move, you poop bullets in the opposite direction. Yeah, I just felt like saying that. I'm a child.
Yeah, it's not so much a timer. It's how many bullets you're shooting.
I guess that is true, hence the title 100 Bullets. Yeah. But I've always just kind of treated it like a timer in my head because I'm always like, come on, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Like, that's the kind of tension that it provides you with, because as you are flying, you're releasing the bullets. And those bullets are, like Joe said, it's counting down those bullets. And you would think that, oh, okay, I'm firing them behind me. They're propelling me. Big whoop. But you're in an enclosed space, and eventually those bullets are going to hit a wall. Once that happens, the bullets are going to go back into the field of which you were playing in. And also, on first impact, it splits into two bullets usually. So it's actually increasing the chaos as you go. Some levels, it's pretty clear. You're like, okay, I just got to find a pathway so that I never have to go back in the direction that my bullets are in. Easy peasy, beautiful cover girl, which is kind of nifty. But eventually, very quickly in the game, actually, they put you in scenarios where you kind of have no choice but to double back into the areas that you've already been in, which means you have to contend with your own bullet streams. And it gets to be pretty tough when you're moving around and it's trying to navigate, also while sweating as you're like counting the bullets in your head, like, okay, hurry up, got to get it over with. Now, there are three difficulties in the game. There's Zen, then there's like a normal mode, and then there's like whatever the expert level is. The only difference is that your ship flies faster and bullets are propelled faster. But really, that's the only difference you need, because depending on the stage you're in, it really stresses you out when you don't have the luxury of time to plan where you're going. It becomes pure twitch as you're evading bullet patterns of your own volition, or of your own design. Now, you might be asking yourself, why would I want to engage in higher difficulties? There should be no reason to do that unless I want to be challenged. Well, yes and no, because while being challenged can be fun, the other reason is because you are awarded flowers, essentially, for for every level you beat, and the higher the difficulty on the stage you complete, the more flowers you're awarded. And these are the gateway or the gatekeeper between different sets of stages. You need to have completed a certain number of or earned a certain number of flowers to access certain stages in addition to completing sets of stages. So if you beat every level on Zen level, you're not going to flower petals to get to access certain levels in the game. Heck, I didn't do the checking myself because I was already knocking them out, but I wouldn't be surprised if you couldn't even beat the first, you couldn't bypass the next, the first set of stages without it playing at least one stage beyond the Zen difficulty. You are ultimately going to have to step out of the, dip your toes in the higher difficulties to further progress in this game. And that's okay, because the entire game is getting better at evading your own chaos, which is kind of cool. And I guess I kind of get the whole theming of it all being, you know, keeping a Zen state, because just like playing a shmup game, and in this game, you eventually kind of reach this state of nirvana where you're just like kind of bobbing and weaving and stuff without even paying attention. Whereas before you get to that state, you're panicking about every bullet and making sure, being concerned about, I'm going to hit that one. But eventually, I'm just bobbing and weaving and dodging and swimming. And it just feels great. It feels good. And I can't speak for anybody else, but whenever I reach that state in a normal shmup, I feel great. And I honestly have experienced it in this game. The only reason why it doesn't stick full time is because when you finally hit it and you're running through a level, the level's already over because there's only 100 bullets long. But that's not to mean that you won't be busting your ass to reach that state, because the game is hard. But it's also fun. And it's a good pick-up and play game. You pick up, do a few levels, put it down, come back later. Pick up, do a few levels, put it down, come back later. And that's all it really needs to be. All in all, like I said, I wasn't a big fan of the marketing that they did with it. But with the final actual release, the game turned out to be a pretty fun little puzzler. And one that I could genuinely recommend to people. Because easy entry, just, again, you got to roll with it and get good at the world they want you to play in. And that's all there is to it.
Carnage saying that there was some kind of save issue that the dev already fixed in a new patch with the game. So if you ran into a save issue, it's already taken care of.
Cheers.
Yay. $10 on this one. What do you think?
I'd say it's a good buy it game. You'll get $10 of fun out of it.
Cool.
I only almost kind of wish there were enemies in the game, but I feel like if there were enemies in addition to your own bullets, that would be wild. But there'd be something to be said about having to kill enemies using bullets that you're firing behind you. So that could have been interesting.
Maybe.
Next. Just goes to show that your biggest enemy is yourself.
That's a lesson we could all learn on this show.
Yeah. Heard. Oh, man. All right. Next up is Royal Frontier, developed by Wobblyware, published by Rattlelake Games, releasing March 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $6.99. The wagons are packed and an eager group of settlers are ready to head out, but the journey is full of dangers. Choose your party, move across the map like a board game, and battle monsters. The combat is a nuanced mix of turn-based and time-based approach, with attacks, specials, and items make each encounter unique.
Oh, you said the word was a thing.
Chris, tell us about Royal Frontier.
Taking a drink. All right. So, yes, this is a game that I was at first a little wary of, because I was like, oh, covered wagon, frontier, moving. Oh, no, this is westward expansion, isn't it? And I don't really like that in fiction, because, you know, then your enemy is the, you know, indigenous people who actually live there already. So turns out this isn't like that. It's just like a medieval RPG type of weird thing. And you're actually moving eastward, so that's okay. So, yeah, you basically, this is a roguelite, pretty light, actually, and it's a really interesting one. So, basically, you choose your party of three. You start off with only three characters to choose from, so there you go. Fighter, monk kind of guy who's like a healer, and then a kind of guy that's like a wizard. He kind of looks like a Waluigi. yeah. And so... Yeah, you basically load up your wagon and choose your blessings. You get a few blessings to begin with, like, you know, better attack, start off with a couple of items, better defense, things like that. And you start off with just a handful, but there's slots for 42 different blessings, so there's a lot of expansion in this. And then your wagon is now on the starting point, and you have three different paths to choose. All of them are going in the same direction, but the different icons on the map will indicate different things that are going to happen. So you got your little skull, that means that you're going to fight a group of enemies. You got your little question mark, which means it's going to be some kind of scenario where you have to make a choice that will either put you in a battle or maybe get you a free item or something. There's treasure chests where you just get to pick like a nice treasure. There's big black skulls that are with red eyes that are bosses and mini bosses, you know, harder to fight, but they're worth a lot more stuff. And then like towns where you can choose to sleep in an inn to restore your HP, because your HP does not heal between battles. It's definitely a, you know, it's an endurance match is what kind of game this is. So you can like restore like 30% of your health or like 30% of your magic power, or it's your special ability power, because everybody has special abilities with basically MP going there. And so, yeah, it's all about like finding the balance with your party. There's actually three more character types that you can unlock once you get to certain points in the game. And the way that it kind of goes is that every time you move a square, or sorry, a spot, then a day passes. And so your goal is to basically survive as many days as you can going perpetually forward. So the battle types are, it's very JRPG, you know, three on one side and, you know, one to three on the other. And you can choose to, you know, simply fight, use an ability, or use an item. Unless you have a loadout, then you don't really start with any items. So, like, oftentimes the choice at the end of the battle will be, like, do you want some money so you can buy items that you want? Or would you like this nice potion that's not worth as much as this money, but, you know, you get your healing right away, which you kind of need. Because, again, when you get hit, you heal every day by a little bit. But it, you know, it's basically... too many battles and you're just going to, you know, whittle away what resources you have. So, you know, you got to be really, really careful. It's a really cool like strategy that way. Interestingly, this reminds me of a video game that I'm in. I've mentioned this maybe twice on this show, but there's a mobile game out there called Battle Legend Infinity that I'm in. Somebody made it using like my old video game cover band as the characters. And it was like, it was a gauntlet style like fighting game where, you know, you basically had to fight as many battles as you could while not getting like restoration between matches. And so, interestingly, this took me back in that sense. Nice. But don't worry about seeking out the game. It's dumb.
Well, is this one dumb?
No, this is actually really good. As you die, like, you unlock more and more blessings so you can get better loadouts. And the blessings, like, you know, they might be the same blessing, but actually way better along the way. So, like, there's this nice feeling of, like, well, if I get these higher level blessings, I'm just going to, like, completely trash the first 10 battles, like, no problem, and then, you know, get a lot further as a result. I really like the strategy involved in, like, picking the characters and, like, using their special moves. And it just has this nice, like, it has this great way of, like, kind of forcing you into this state of desperation that, like, a lot of RPGs don't do, because, you know, you can always grind through an RPG, right? So, but in this one, it's like you're using you're up against, like, these three bandits, and you're like, okay, this bandit can hit me twice, this one can hit my whole group. I got to figure out who to fight, and I got to use up all the rest of my items, because I'm about at death's door, and if I die here, then I got to start over. But if I can make it past these guys, maybe I can luck out in the next thing, or maybe there's a town. It's like, it's a nice game for making you desperate for for like the limited resources that you have. So for that reason, I actually found this very intriguing, and I think it's a good one.
Cool. $7, your verdict?
Yeah, I didn't even know it was $7. That's way cheaper than I thought it was. it's a buy it.
Cool. Speaking of cheap games, the next one is Dungeon Color, developed by Gigonfi, published by Cubite Interactive, released March 10th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for a whopping $3.99. Dungeon nice. Color is a top-down puzzle game where you switch between flames in order to achieve a rainbow flame in each room. Interact with colors and switch between flames to match each door. Every door only opens when you are with its respective color. Brooke, tell us about your time with Dungeon Color.
No, I actually like Dungeon Color. This is just a nice little game. Did y'all ever play Chips Challenge? I want to ask this to y'all and the Twitch chat. Anybody play Chips Challenge?
What was it on?
It was like what was on that 300 game disc I had when I was a kid. Super old DOS game. Google this. You will have seen images from it. This is like famous old early 90s game.
Yeah, I remember this one. Yeah.
Well, this is definitely the game that this game is based on. Like, I'm not even going to say this is inspired by the game. This is straight up based on Chips Challenge. And I don't think it's ripping any part of it off. It's a love letter to this game that a lot of us played when we were kids. And I think it's a really cool take on it. I think it's adding a lot. If you played Chips Challenge, you know, I never thought I'd say this about a modern game, but I have never played a game more directly influenced both mechanically and aesthetically than Chips Challenge. And that to anyone who's played it, that's going to sound really weird because Chips Challenge is like really, really old, super like ugly game. You know, Ski Free was cute, but it's ugly. It's from a long, long time ago.
It's on the Atari Lynx.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's so cool to like find out where all these games that were on that like 300 game disc I had when I was a kid that blew my mind like came from. I just assumed that a lot of them are DOS games, but super wrong about that. So unlike Chips Challenge, this game is very pretty and cute. Like it's doing the same kind of mechanical thing. And it's pretty well made too, pretty smooth and clean considering a couple things that I'll mention later. It's a pretty smooth little puzzle game. So Joe kind of went over this in the description, but to people who are familiar with Chips Challenge, the premise of this game will come as no surprise. Yeah, collect three different colored keys per level to unlock four different colored doors. Door color responding to key color, and just like in Chips Challenge, the colors are red, blue, yellow, and green. Each level where you're collecting these keys is a puzzle, and you'll likely need to kind of skim over the level. They're not huge, they're not super like crazy looking. Skim over the level a bit to kind of plot a course out first in case you get stuck. Just like in Chips Challenge, you might need to collect things in a certain order or avoid specific obstacles or things to pull off like unlocking yourself to the next multicolored rainbow flame exit. So the difference between this game and Chips Challenge, instead of just keys, and I'm not using keys to say like these are the flame colors that Joe talked about in the description. You're doing keys and you're toggling between different colored, almost like elevator style, closing and opening doors by stepping on one of four color flames. Once again, those flames and the keys are red, yellow, green, and blue. And you're not playing as Chip. You're playing as far as I can tell, the Pillsbury Doughboy, but with flames on his head. He's really cute. He's a cute little guy. And not just any flames. You've got beautiful, flowing white flames that are your hair when each level starts out. And then your hair color will change to the same color as whatever flame key you touch last. So if you touch the green flame, boom, you got green hair. You touch the red flame, boom, red hair. Your hair color is not permanent in this game. Very nice. Just a little something for the ladies. I actually have in my notes here, cut this joke out if Aki is in the Twitch stream, because it's just going to make her angry. I don't know if Aki is still here, but if you are, I'm thinking about you. I'm considering you in these reviews, girl. So, Joe, this game is, what is it? It's $2.99 or
$3.99.
Okay, that's awesome. This game has a ton of content in it for that price. I think that, you know, it's a really clean puzzle game, but I do have a couple little complaints, really small, not game-breaking. Here's what you need to know if you're thinking about getting this game, just so it doesn't confuse you like it did me, or, you know, if you're the dev listening and you want to, like, make some patches or updates in the future. No pressure, though. For most puzzle games, like every other puzzle game I've ever played, you know, small puzzle games that do its thing from level to level, and each level is a new, like, self-contained riddle. Normally, if you get stuck, especially in a game that's trying to get you stuck on purpose sometimes to make you restart and think about the level in a different way, you'll be able to press the start button and just hit restart the level. You normally don't have to exit out of the level and go to the home screen and then go back to the level select screen and reselect your level. You do in this game. That's obviously a choice that the developers made, but it is a little weird and strange, especially because, okay, so there's a bigger issue with this game, but not a huge issue at all, and it's not game breaking at all. They like to put the flame key things on the ground right next to the door where you will walk over the door. That's fine, but there's also a bug in this game where if you're too close to a door, when it closes, you will be eternally stuck in that door and you can't move and you got to restart the level, which, you know, also would be less annoying if you don't have to restart by going to the home menu, reselecting the level, so on and so forth. It doesn't sound that bad, and it's really not, but it kind of took me a while to figure out what was happening in the game when it happened to me. And then I had to actually just close the program down. But other than that, everything works really well. I don't want to shoot a dead horse here like I did all weekend in Elden Ring. So I'm ready to go into the ring. Lots of skeleton horses in this game, by the way. Undead horses. I'm very terrified. Not this one, but Elden Ring.
It's only $4. What are your thoughts?
This is still a buy it for me, even with its flaws. Maybe at its harshest, I would call this a buy it, but, and not a buy it, but don't buy it. If you don't like certain things, buy it, but just know these two things going into it. I think this would be an awesome game to buy at the beginning of like a plane ride, train ride, or like short road trip. See if you can beat it all before you get to your destination. Maybe face off with your friend. See who can beat it in less overall game time if you guys want to start at the same time playing like from other places. I think that could be really fun. I actually thought this was a neat little puzzle game. I played a fair amount of this weekend, even though it was close to impossible to tear me away from Elden Ring. So that is saying something. I'm on level 26 now. There's 40 levels overall. I'm over halfway in, and they just added a new mechanic, like maybe the last level or the level before that. So there's a lot of content here for sure. I actually think this game works really well. It made me nostalgic for a game that I loved as a child, and it brought a lot more to the table. You can't ask more for that than that for this price point. If the people who made this game are listening to this and they fix a couple of the things that I said above, I've already given you a buy it, but please reach out to me if you do fix those things. I'd be happy to like tweet to support your game, update the listeners on the show if a couple of these things do ever get updated, but no pressure. I'd love to make a tweet saying you got a great game, because you do. This is a really good little game. This is the perfect game to play when you are charging your controller back up for your PS4 and PS5 in between any games that will remain nameless.
Elden Ring.
You know,
she didn't say it.
He got it. Yeah, but this is a great little game.
It was a tough guess. I had to take a shot. Next up is One Gun Guy, developed by Ritual Games, Grab the Games, and Rattleaka Games, published by Checkmate Publishing, released March 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. One Gun Guy is a straightforward, no-nonsense action platformer, one giant level littered with player upgrades, hazards to tackle, enemies to destroy, and a boss to kill. After conquering the base difficulty, take on the precision platformer's hard mode in your underwear. Purnell, how are you looking in your underwear over there?
Dead. Looking dead.
You're looking dead also, in your underwear.
You literally just described the game. that is the game. Christ. This is going to be real quick. So, One Gun Guy, you are a guy with one gun. You are playing through... I had to say that. You are playing through a stage, like a single stage, to get from beginning to the end to defeat the boss at the end. Interestingly enough, they designed this to be just one on constantly proceeding stage. Like, it never has, there are no breaks, there are no separations, nothing. It just keeps going to the end. Though they do change stuff up as you go, like, they add elements that would constitute a normal new stage in a typical game, but they just keep it all in one run, hence the theming of the title. Progression-wise, as you're moving around, you have a few abilities at your disposal. You have a gun that pew pew pews, but you can also hold down the button to charge up into a big pew. You can jump. Punique. You can jump. You can double jump. You can hover on your way down or to make some longer jumps. That's your base arsenal. Every once in a while, you'll come across an icon that looks like a one-up, but it's actually like a power-up. When you pick it up, you will begin progressing through a series of upgrades that you can get. There aren't a ton, but they're still there. Like, there's a split shot that you can get, so like a spread gun, a bubble shield looking thing, and then there's also like a second hit that you can take. I'll be honest with you, and I beat the game. There was a few of these things I didn't even know what they did. It was like, you got them. Like, all right, whatever. The ones I knew for sure were the one that gave me the spread shot and the one that gave me, like, let me absorb a hit. They were the ones that were important to me because they allowed me to keep moving. Once you've maxed it out, though, and you pick up another one, you get a period of invincibility, which is kind of nice, and you can exploit the living daylights out of this because you can run through obstacles with it, you can run through spikes, all those good things. And you'll be, like I said, I spray abused that a few times just for the sake of getting past parts that sucked. But you'll basically do these things. These are the forms of pickups that you'll get. You'll just run through the game. Like, every once in a while, you'll come across a secret room that you can find, and that secret room will contain, again, like, money, which, if you get 100 coins, it gives you another power-up level. And then you'll also find the faces for a power-up level as well. There's an achievement for actually finding all the hidden rooms, and I did not get it, which means I missed one or two, which kind of sucks, because I thought I was doing a badass run. Turns out I wasn't doing it. But I got through the entire game. I fought the boss. I won. Thought, this game is really freaking easy. I did it on my first play. And then you unlock the hard mode. Fuck that. Hard mode is literally the same game you already played, but you are in your drawers and you have no abilities, just your gun. So all the things you might have used in the previous run to, you know, evade things or like cheese through spikes, you don't have any of that now. One hit and you're dead, and you can't grow stronger. And oddly enough, it's kind of funny because obviously I'm okay with the idea of a game being harder, but there was a part of me I was like, I kind of liked being able to glide and double jump. All the things that made one gun guy such a one gun guy are gone now. Now he's just new dude. And I wanted to be one gun guy still. but it's interesting in its own right, though, because I think we had this chat on a previous episode of the show, the whole Radaleika getting away from the easy achievements bit. I feel like this counts for that because one of the achievements is getting through one gun guy mode without dying. So essentially playing the entire game without getting hit. It's like, it feels like a Mega Man level cheat. Though, in the game's defense, though, this game is not as hard as a Mega Man 9 or 10. But it still can be pretty tough. So going into hard mode, it is going to be truly a hard mode if you're intent on getting the achievements for this title. All in all, I mean, the only real gripe I had about the title was, and it's a small gripe, is that the music loops. Like, it's one track that plays throughout the entirety of the game. And the run took me, I think, about 40 minutes or 45 minutes to get through.
It's not bad.
And that, it's not bad at all. But that track played for the 45 minutes. And this ain't no RPG, baby. So this, it was like, like for 45 minutes. Wasn't a bad track. Just, I can imagine some folks getting a little tired of the tune by the end. But in the end, I had a fun time playing it. I looked forward to actually finally getting to the end of it. Not in a, oh God, another section thing so much as like a, whoa, another section. How much longer is this thing? I'm wondering how much further I have to go. Like, more of the inquisitive version of it, not that I'm exhausted and wish it would end version of it. So, in the end, I think this was a fun title. It's a good time. And how much are you selling it for?
It is $4.99. So, what is your verdict?
Well, that's an easy buy. Easy buy.
Cool. Anything else to say about it?
No, just maybe there was a sequel two gun guy or two gun guys. Woohoo! Two players, of two gun guys.
That's just wishful thinking. Oh, and Pernell would also like artifact collecting and talking to more villagers.
Yes, mining.
I would like more villagers mining. Yes, talking to mining villagers would be a larf.
It does sound pretty good.
Okay. Anyway, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and it is a preview of MotoGP 22, developed and published by Milestone. This one will be releasing April 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC. The full 2022 season, 120 official riders, 20-plus official circuits, 70-plus historic riders, and the most beloved features are back, now improved for the best racing experience. But there's much more. Chris, tell us about your time with the preview build of MotoGP 22.
Okay, but don't expect me to tell you all what the much more is. This is the first Moto game I've played.
Yeah, and this is just an early preview build, so we're just taking an early look at this. We'll probably take a more final look at it next month closer to release.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's locked away. Career mode, of course, multiplayer, naturally. Actually, though, split-screen multiplayer is up and running. Nice. However, I didn't have a person to play it with, so I didn't get to try that. And that's one of the new features, apparently. But that's okay. I'm sure it's great. So yeah, MotoGP is a, of course, a longstanding series of motorcycle racing games. Now, racing games tend to come in two flavors, and that is your arcade style game. You know, you're cruising, cruising the world, and Excitebots, trick racing, and you know, things like that, where it's like, you know, just have some fun. Just try and get to that finish line. Oh, yeah, and your Mario Karts, I guess, as well. And who knows? Let's just say Elden Ring as well. but, yeah, you're racing to the end and, you know, having fun. And, like, you know, it's like a turn might go awry or something like that. You might get hit by a blue shell. But ultimately, you know, it's all in good fun. Until you get hit by like three blue shells and then you start raging and screaming, I'm using tilt controls in the multiplayer hub, which is what I do, by the way. sorry, that's an in-joke. So there's the other flavor of racing game is the hyper-realistic racing simulation where every little last thread of the thing is supposed to be couched in absolute reality, except for the part where when you fall off the bike, you just, like, you know, get burned up and killed and spend months in the hospital. I'm still waiting on that feature. But no, in this one, so this one is very much on the realism simulation side of racing, which is going to be very thrilling if you like to look at realistic courses, people, movements, if you like to really feel like you're driving this motorbike, you know, across the, I don't know what it is, pavement, asphalt, I don't even know. and, you know, but a little frustrating if you don't already know how to do it. This game has like 30 tutorials in it that cover like every single part of the mechanics. And you know why? Because you need them. if you're coming into this series cold, like I was, you are going to have a time just getting your bike not to spin out and, like, you know, in fact, I will say that it's very much like a Dark Souls experience because, you know, you have to spend a lot of time getting good before you can get anywhere, and there's lots of rolling involved.
Wow, that was really good.
Thank you, thank you.
He's been watching streamers. God, he knows what he's talking about.
Hell yeah. Anyways. So, yeah, it's a tough game to, like, get a hold of, you know, because, like, the thing about, you know, motorcycles, turn radius is basically tilt the thing all the way over where basically your knee's touching the ground, and then you're going, like, 3 miles an hour in order to, like, you know, make these, like, really razor-sharp turns and then speed back up and try and pass somebody else until you have to do it again. If you don't tap the brake, I mean slam the brake, actually, like, exactly when you're supposed to, then you're going to end up in a wall. Just, you know, Jimmy Hoffa, just part of the concrete at that point. So I don't know about motorcycles, but so I threw in some jokes. Anyways, so, like, yeah, this is a, but here's the thing is about it is that as you're learning how to play this game, and by the way, this game is extensive in stuff that you can just do by yourself that doesn't involve racing other people and trying to kick them off their bikes. Like, there's a ton of courses. Like I said, it draws from the previous games. It has a lot of racers. You can create your own racer. I made a derpy guy called Jimothy.
And,
yeah. And you know, you can, like, you can really do, like, all this stuff, like, and again, all the tutorials to, like, really learn and, like, get to know, like, the physics of the game. And it's really rewarding to do so because this game really dedicates itself to realism. Everything down to the way the tires burn up in a race is, like, accounted for, and a lot of it is optional. So you have all these, like, options for what you can, like, do to the weather, to the, you know, course. There's even a course editor. And like I said, you can turn on and off fuel consumption and, like, tire consumption, and you can have guided turning, guided braking. You can put a line in the road to follow, and it turns red when you're supposed to be braking. Like, there's, the game gives you every opportunity to get good at this game, but it does not pull any punches in terms of, like, the physics of it. So in that sense, it's a really rewarding experience, and I really love the visuals. And actually, I'm going to just dedicate this last part to the thing that I love the most that I wasn't expecting. I just was playing with it. So you can turn on weather effects. If you turn on rain, The rain in this game is the best looking rain I've seen in a video game, just bar none. It looks amazing. It comes down on the ground, makes little splashes like your tires splash. It gets on the camera, and if you fully brake and stop your race, you will see the water start dripping down the camera. And then when you speed back up, it starts, like, you know, actually
streaming
being forced
again.
Off of, yeah.
Like, that is cool.
It is.
I love the little touches like that in games like this.
Yeah, and like that's this game. It's full of like little touches like that that you might not notice if you're, you know, just in it to like, you know, drive around on some motorcycles and stuff. It's a game that kind of forces you to slow down and learn it and like get absorbed into it, like any good simulation would be. So, and then of course it's a roguelite. So once you complete a race, you get to choose your power up, and you know, if you die, then you get to start over with a better loadout, et cetera, et cetera.
Strange new places.
40 unlockable horses. So this one isn't out for another month or so still. What are your thoughts on it? Is this something that people should keep an eye on if they're into the genre?
Oh, for sure. If you're into the genre, this is a very popular, like it's niche, but very popular. It's, you know, maybe it's the Elden Ring of like of motorcycle, you know, simulation. But yeah, I think fans of the series are going to be very pleased with this one. Again, I can't speak much to how it compares to the prior games, but I do know that graphics haven't looked this good for very long. So you're going to definitely, you know, your jaw is going to hit the ground when you see some of the stuff that's in this game. Yeah, like apart from the stuff they have locked away, I mean, nothing I played in this was like felt broken or unfinished. So like at this point, it seems like they just got a month to like basically, you know, unlock some stuff and throw a little polish on it somewhere. I don't know. Maybe add in like 70 more character people I've never heard of. Like, who knows?
I guarantee you, someone's going to hear that and they're going to be like, "You motherfucker! How have you not heard of these guys?"
Come at me, bro.
Oh man! All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through. Good job, everyone.
Right under the wire.
I owe it all to my fans. You know. All zero of them, but it was worth it.
Well, you live in Delaware, you don't need fans.
That is true.
I live in Texas, we gotta have them.
Alright.
Like the
Brooke's brain is computing what has just happened. I'm just trying to figure it out.
That works.
Gold. Beautiful gold happened.
Oh man, alright, well that is it for this episode. Music, gonna play some more Tiberian Sons because they have a new EP out, so let's listen to some more of them. And anyone have any final words to end this son of a bitch?
I wanted to thank Purnell. Well, we'll let Purnell go first, then I'll thank him.
I was going to just say, remember to get, I don't know hey, before, but I was going to say, everybody remember to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep, because if you don't, you'll sound like me when I keep forgetting shit.
I couldn't sleep at all last night. I'm totally caffeinated getting through this episode. If I sounded messed up tonight, I was.
And I was like, make sure to get your 7-8 hours of Elden Ring in every day.
I really thought that's where he was going with that. I don't know why. I wanted to thank Purnell before we left for encouraging me to actually take on some creatures and run around the world in Elden Ring last night. I did that night. And I don't know if you saw, I beat that troll like within an hour or so of you telling me you thought I could do it at that level. And nice. It was... That was the last thing I did for International Women's Day. And it just made me feel so good. And I just
there
wanted
it is.
To... Yeah, this is a show where I was encouraged last week, and it was awesome.
Just goes to show you, don't let nobody tell you what you can't do.
And now we're at the end of another episode, so now you get to choose one of two power-ups that you can use for the next episode.
Oh my god. You have to choose
what
now.
Power-ups?
What are the two power-ups?
My power-up that I'm going to choose is the power of ending tangents.